You're listening to Your Financial Choices on WDIY Allentown. Your Financial Choices may discuss various financial-related topics and thus would like to offer the following disclosures. Lori Siebert is employed by Valley National Group, the Valley National Financial Advisors Group of Companies. Investments are offered through Valley National Investments Incorporated, member FINRA, SIPC. To ensure compliance with requirements imposed by the IRS, we inform you that any U.S. federal tax advice contained in this communication is not intended to or to be used for the purpose of avoiding penalties under the Internal Revenue Code or promoting, marketing, or recommending to another party any transaction or matter addressed herein. This show is for educational purposes only. For advice specific to your own situation, we recommend that you consult your CPA, CFP, or attorney.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to the show. Today is January 9th, 2013. The markets were up today, the Dow closing at 13,390, the NASDAQ at 3,105, and the S&P closed at 1,461. Happy to have you all here. Last week, I discussed the American Taxpayer Relief Act, and I'm probably going to highlight a few things from that tonight as well at the beginning of the show. But then as we go on, I'm going to talk about ways to get ready for your tax appointment or for you to get ready for preparing your own tax return if you're a self-preparer. We are live. Andrea is with us, and she will answer your calls, take your information, and ask you to mute your radio so you can hear me without the delay and we could talk without confusion. We do discuss general financial planning topics and not specific investments. And while I do typically have a topic each week, you can still ask questions off topic, and I'll do my best to answer them. You can talk live on air, which is the most fun for me. Or if you're not comfortable talking on air, don't be so shy. You can still call in and just give your question to Andrea, and she will bring it in. So we're very flexible here. The number to call in this evening is 610-758-8810. That is 610-758-8810. And I have to apologize ahead of time. I think I'm getting a cold, so I sound a little stuffy tonight. So I'm sorry if I lose my voice here and there. So getting ready for tax season, I did cover this topic last year too. I always think it's a good idea to kind of do like a little assessment of what you need to do to get ready. I certainly believe it helps you if you use a preparer to prepare your tax return, because I'm all about being ready so you're not wasting your time or your tax preparer's time during a tax appointment. Because if you're in an appointment longer than you need to be, then you're paying for more than you need to. Okay, so I think it's well worth listening to kind of make sure that you get everything in order and be as efficient as you can in getting ready for your appointment. If you're self-preparing your return, you might think you have more time to do that and you don't need to be as, you know, particular about getting ready. But the reason you want to be particular is you don't want to make any mistakes. So we're going to talk about some of those tips to keep you efficient, effective, and on the right track in preparing your tax returns this year. I do want to talk about a few things, and one in particular I highlighted at the end of last week's show. And a few of these items are a little obscure, but they are very important to the people that they may apply to. So what they are is, one, IRA distributions to charity. I'm going to follow up with something I mentioned at the end of the show last week, and it has to do with this American Taxpayer Relief Act, some new extensions, as well as donations of easements for conservation purposes. That's for people who, let's say, own land or even, you know, a home or buildings that they want to protect from further development. We call those conservation easements. The conservation easements can be donated or can be sold or a combination of both. So I want to talk about some of the extensions on that and why it's important to people who are considering doing a conservation easement, why it's important to start early. And then lastly, I want to highlight a little bit about research tax credits. And that is a credit for taxpayers engaged in qualified research activities. I just want to bring it to your attention because it could apply more than we realize. Even For me as a tax preparer, it's a very complicated subject. I'm not going to get into all the details of it, but I think that there are entrepreneurs out there that this may apply to that you need to be aware of it, because if it does apply, there's a lot of strict record keeping that you need to be aware of. All right. So I'm going to start the show talking about these few very little obscure things, one not as obscure as the other, and that's the IRA distributions. And then I'm going to move on to talking about how to get ready for preparing your tax return, whether you're self-preparing or whether you're having a preparer do it for you, and trying to save you time, which costs you money when you're paying someone to prepare your return. The phone number this evening, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. So, as I had said, something that I mentioned at the end of last week's show could be very important for people who are age 70 and a half or older. So you yourself may not be 70 and a half, but you may have parents who are 70 and a half or older, or aunts or uncles or grandparents who may not be aware of this little rule. So I want to go over it. And the reason it applies to people who are 70 and a half or older, and you heard me mention IRAs, it's because once someone reaches age 70 and a half, they're in the required minimum distribution rules. So once someone who has an IRA reaches age 70 and a half, if they've never taken money out of the IRA before, they must start taking money out of their IRA at age 70 and a half, in particular if you're not working. There's special rules sometimes for 401ks if you're still working, but if you have an IRA and you're age 70 and a half or older, you have to start taking money out of your IRA. It's called a required minimum distribution, RMD. And one of the things that had come up in just recent years, and this was kind of a new tax planning strategy, and I actually just really, really loved it. But it kind of came in for a couple years, then it went away for a year, and now it's come back for a couple years. But we didn't even know we had it until, you know, after the 1st of January. And that is, if you are someone who's 70 and a half or older, and you have required minimum distributions out of an IRA, the American Taxpayer Relief Act extended a benefit to people who want to, instead of taking their distribution, or instead of taking all of your distribution, want to donate some or all of it to a charity. There's a cap on it. It can't be more than $100,000. Let's pretend you're someone who gives money to charity every year, and let's say you give $2,000 to charity throughout the year. And the only way you're able to give money to charity is maybe because you're taking the money out of your IRA. Now, if you're someone who files a tax return and pays income taxes, but you don't itemize, normally if you're giving to charity and you don't itemize, you're not getting any benefit for that contribution. But if you're someone who doesn't itemize and you're making contributions to charity, and you're also taking money out of IRAs and paying income tax on that, then this is a great benefit, because in lieu of you taking the money out of the IRA directly and then writing a check to the charity, the IRS says for people who are 70 and a half or older, you can make a qualified distribution to a charity, and then you don't have to report that distribution on your tax return. So in my example, I'm 70 and a half or older. I don't itemize. I give $2,000 to a charity, but I also have other income on my return, like pensions or interest or dividends, such that I normally pay income tax. Maybe just a little bit, but I pay income tax. If I take that $2,000 off my tax return because I give it to a charity, that reduces my page one income. It reduces the income tax on that amount of money. It might even throw me into a situation where I can now itemize if I lower my income on page one. So what happened with this American Taxpayer Relief Act as of, you know, January 1 of 2013, they said, we didn't have this in 2012, but now we're going to let you have it for 2012. So here's the confusing part. For all these people who are 70 and a half or older who were aware of this great little tool of making instead of taking your distribution, you made it payable directly to charity. We didn't know that was available in 2012, so you might have missed the opportunity. Well, they're giving us some transition rules, and it's only going to apply very limitedly, but the reason you need to know about it is because you have to act by the end of the month. So when we come back from the break, I'm going to tell you what your options are, if they apply to you, and what you can do about it. If you have questions tonight, call me, 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including fee-based asset management. It all starts with personal goals and an understanding of risk tolerance, investment objectives, and the markets. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
It's cold outside, but you're invited to join us as we heat things up on Saturday, February 2nd at WDIY's Winter Blast. Our annual party will be a night of eating, drinking, and dancing as we blast away the winter blues at Symphony Hall in Allentown from 7 to 11 p.m. Music by John Carlos Sanchez will start the evening, followed by Lehigh Valley Soul Project. The night will also include a photo stage and a silent auction. Tickets are $45 for members, $60 for non-members, and can be purchased online or by calling the station.
Okay, welcome back to the show. This is your host, Lori Siebert. We're talking about getting ready for tax season, but I'm also talking just about a few little obscure extensions that we got through the American Taxpayer Relief Act. And then we'll move on to getting ready for your tax appointment. I do want to say, though, we just had that break that talked about the WDIY Winter Blast. That's Saturday, February 2nd. And you can, I guess, call in for tickets or go to WDIY.org. I think I'm going to try to go to that. And Jeff said he's going to try to go to that. Maybe we'll get Andrea to try to go to that. In the past, I've always been at volleyball tournaments, but my daughter is in college now, and I think I actually will be available, so that might be kind of fun to do. So if you want to come, maybe you could come and say, hi, Lori, I listened to the show. That would be nice. Now, we did have a call come in off air. We had Pete from Bethlehem had called in, and he said he's a single owner of an LLC. An LLC is a limited liability company, people, and a limited liability can be set up a number of different ways. It could be set up as a partnership, or it could be, I think, even set up as a S corporation. But he's a single owner, so it's a single member, and that's typically a sole proprietor. And sole proprietors report their income on their federal 1040 on a Schedule C. And he had asked, can the income from 2012 be saved for the next year instead of distributing it to the owner? So, Pete, I'm going to try to interpret what you're asking exactly here. What I am assuming is you have a business, you put it under an LLC, single member LLC, that gives you a little bit of extra protection, although I don't think it's ever been tested in the courts exactly, but people are looking to limit their liability, especially when they're self-employed and in business, and they're hoping that that LLC gives them that extra little bit of protection. And you're running a business, and it could be consulting, it could be a store, it could be painting, it could be whatever. So you're collecting income throughout the year, and you're putting it into the bank, and hopefully you're putting it into a bank account under the LLC. And let's say you're paying your bills out of that as well. And at the end of the year, there's, you know, $10,000 in the bank. And your question was, can the income from 2012 be saved for the next year instead of distributing it to the owner? What does not happen, Pete, is any income that you collected and earned in 2012 and that you deposited, because you're a cash basis taxpayer, we report the income when we receive it. So if you have received income and you've put it in your bank, that is still being reported on your 2012 return. But just because it's sitting in the bank account at the end of the year does not mean that doesn't get reported, okay? So you're reporting your income, you're reporting your expenses. That's your bank account. So you can take money out of that bank account at the end of the year if you want to. You don't have to take it out. You can leave it in the bank account for 2013. That doesn't really matter. One of the things that would be affected, though, Pete, is there is something called the corporate franchise tax in Pennsylvania. And each year, if you have an LLC, you're having to file an RCT 101. That's going to go away, I think, in a couple years. But until it does, one of the things that the RCT 101 is used for is to basically report, your balance sheet. So your assets at the beginning of the year and your assets at the end of the year. And the corporate franchise tax is based on a number of things. One of them is like your average, I think, revenue over the years, but also it has something to do with the bank balance at the end of the year. And it all depends on how the average of your income meshes with, I believe, that bank balance. So that could be affected. The corporate franchise tax could be affected if you leave the money in that bank account. So I'm not going to tell you what the right thing or wrong thing is because I don't know your situation and I have someone in our office prepare those. So I'm not totally privy to all of the exact calculations of when someone has to pay a corporate franchise tax or not if they have a balance in their LLC at the end of the year. So just be aware that you can leave that money in the bank. It does not have to come out just because you've reported it and paid income tax, but the income that you have received is reported on your 2012 return. If you received it in 2012, if you've left a balance in your bank account at the end of 2012, it's not going to matter. You're a sole proprietor. It's your money. Just be aware that it could be impact the corporate franchise tax. Okay? So I hope that helped explain it somewhat. And you can, if it's your first year with this, then you can go Google RCT 101 and get more information about that. And those forms are available on the Pennsylvania Department of Revenue's website as well. All right? So to finish up my comments before the break, I was talking about people who are age 70 and a half or older who are in the RMD stage where they're taking out minimum distributions. And then this Taxpayer Relief Act came and said, hey, folks, in 2012, if you wanted to make contributions to a charity from your IRA, you don't have to report that income. But whoops, we're already past 2012. It's not going to work anymore. They gave us some transition rules. All right, so the transition rules are, and I'm going to read this because I think it's a little complicated. It allows taxpayers to recharacterize. No, let me read the first one. That makes more sense. The rule permits taxpayers to treat a distribution from the IRA to the individual that was made in December of 2012 as a charitable distribution if transferred to the charity before February 1st, 2013. So I don't think the people who took their required minimum distributions January through November of 2012 can do anything about this now. The way I've read this was that if you took a distribution in December of 2012 and you quick decide you're not going to keep that and you're going to make it payable to charity, then you can treat that distribution as being made in 2012. So in my example earlier, I have a $2,000 RMD. Let's pretend I took it in December of 2012, but of course I put it in my bank account because I didn't know this rule applied. Now the American Taxpayer Relief Act comes out. They say, hey, people who took a distribution in December of 2012, if you now in turn make a payment to the charity by the end of January, you can deem that December distribution as not taxable or reportable on page one of your return. Okay, so you need to know that if you want to correct that or take advantage of that transition rule, you'll have to make a contribution to the charity and document everything and make sure it all matches up and again, you have to have been in the required minimum distribution stage. Now, this other rule that was part of the transition rule, this one I'd have to read more about because I couldn't quite, I'm trying to envision it. It said it allows taxpayers to recharacterize distributions made in January of 2013 as made on December 31st, 2012. So in this example, I think what they're saying is if I took my required minimum distribution in January and it was $2,000, and then in 2013 it would be income taxable in 2013, what they're saying is we can make the distribution to charity, the 2013 distribution to charity, instead of taking my RMD in January, I could make it payable to the charity and then deem that to have been done in 2012. I don't really know how that works, because if we're allowed to have it in 2013 anyway, I don't know what sense that makes. So there might be some cases where maybe someone, you know, used all the rest of their IRA in January. So a little complicated, but you still need to be aware of it. All right. We are coming up on our next break. When I come back in the next segment, I'm just going to quickly cover the conservation easement and the research credit. And then in the last half hour, we'll talk about getting ready for tax season. If you have questions, the phone number is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including income tax preparation for individuals, businesses, estates, and trusts. Tax preparation involves more than putting numbers on a return. It requires planning. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Folks, if you have questions this evening, give me a call, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. And Pete, I want to thank you for calling in earlier. That was great. And I don't know if I thanked you, but I love phone calls. So I appreciate when I get at least one during the show. The other thing I want to mention, too, is I'm always looking for ideas for shows. So I've been doing this a little over 5 years now, and trying to come up with new things to talk about sometimes can get a little taxing, so to speak. So if people have ideas, I love hearing them. And if you have something, you know, complicated, or you think it might apply to, you know, our listening audience, send in your ideas or call Andrea and let her know what your ideas are. You don't need to talk on air if you don't want to. Love the ideas. And if you want to learn more about something, take advantage of the ability I have to research and get all that information and do a show on it. So it's quite fun. It's a great way for me to learn as well. I have coming up, I believe in January, we're going to try to have someone come on who is a recruiter, in particular, I believe in the healthcare field. And I'm really excited about that. They would be from Philadelphia, but the Lehigh Valley has so many facilities here with all of our hospitals and our doctors and all of that, and great, great opportunities. So for listeners who are interested in the medical field, professionals in the medical field, this person I'm hoping can come on and not only talk about recruiting and how to get jobs and all of that, but also in particular, maybe the healthcare field, because again, a big part of our demographics here are our healthcare professionals. And then I'm also going to be lucky enough to have a representative from the PICPA, which is the Pennsylvania Institute of Certified Public Accountants, come on and talk about resources that the PICPA has available to people during tax season, and talk about some of the benefits of the members, benefits of to the consumers out there. So that'll be good. So I have those couple shows coming up by the end of January. And we, especially for members of WDIY, we send out weekly reminders of what's coming up, you know, on the programming for the week at WDIY. So if you're a member, you're lucky enough to get that email each week. It kind of talks about the highlights of what's coming up. And so if you're not a member, you can always become a member by going on the website, wdiy.org, and then you get to know what is always on the calendar. And I also believe they have past shows on the website now, so you can listen to the topics that we've had in the past. All right. Oh, and Andrea has a question that came in. So before I get to my other obscure topics, it's off air. We had Jane from Brynexville. She just started a small company in November. What is my tax liability? She said, do I have any if I haven't made more than $600? I also took a loss in 2012. Should I have an accountant prepare my tax return? And right now she only has one bank account right now, not a separate bank account. Well, Jane, you have a few things going on here. It looks to me like 2012 will be a new tax reporting year for you with having a business. So I'm assuming you are self-employed, and self-employed people file a Schedule C with their 1040 and also with their Pennsylvania return. And sometimes the reporting we do for federal might be a little bit different than Pennsylvania. So one of the questions you asked is, should you have an accountant prepare your tax return? Maybe it wouldn't matter in 2012. Maybe going forward, it might make a difference. It kind of all depends on what you have going on your tax return. If you're a consultant, for example, and let's pretend you're just collecting cash, that's, you know, cash, checks, charge, whatever, but revenue, that could be a fairly easy tax return. Where sometimes the tax returns get a little bit more complicated with businesses is if you are depreciating items, meaning you're making purchases, capital improvements, equipment, things that have a useful life of more than a year. The rules for depreciation are different for federal from Pennsylvania. So unless you have the time or the wherewithal to sit and figure that all out, sometimes it's easier to use a tax preparer. Sometimes the software that you can buy out there that's available might do those calculations for you, you know, like a TurboTax or H&R Block, something like those software programs. My caution on those kinds of software is you have to almost have an understanding of what your situation is before you start entering. I had a friend once who entered the real estate taxes every place they asked, and he didn't realize he was like double reporting all of his real estate taxes because he had real estate taxes personally and real estate taxes for his rental properties, and he reported them double like everywhere. So you have to be careful with software too. You can't always assume that it's going to know exactly how to interpret what you're inputting. Now, so that's the difference of like, should you have an accountant or should not? It kind of depends on how complicated your situation is. Maybe not the first year, but then as you ramp up, some of the things that happen is if you really, really start making money in your business, then you have to start making some decisions about, do you have a retirement account? And if you do not have a retirement account, what's the best kind of retirement account to set up for yourself? Why would you set up a retirement account? Well, if you're working, you need to start saving some of your money for retirement. But there are certain tax advantages to having a retirement account as well. And those tax advantages all depend on which retirement account you end up setting up. So those questions could be more complicated as you go. There is also something, Jane, that is, it's Social Security income. It's your self-employment income. Self-employment income is subject to Social Security tax. So you're going to have to be aware of that. You had said, I haven't made more than $600. Well, if you make more than $400 profit, you're going to be subject to the self-employment tax. And that's the Schedule SE, SE for self-employment. And it's basically Social Security. But when you're self-employed, you're paying both sides of the Social Security tax, both the employer side and the employee side. So that's going to complicate your return a tiny bit too, because there's a little credit on page one. Now, you had said, though, I thought you had said, you said you're going to have a loss. So you're going to have a loss in 2012, so we already know you're not going to have self-employment tax. The loss, when you're self-employed and it's your first year, you can take that loss and offset it against other income. You have to be in business to make a profit. Typically in the first year, sometimes we see that people, you know, have losses because you're setting up your business. That's the other piece you want to be careful of, Jane, is if you have setup costs, sometimes those costs have to be capitalized depending on how much they are. The IRS has made those rules much more flexible in recent years. It used to be you had to amortize them over 5 years. Now there's a, 5 years. I have to go back and check on that. But you used to have to amortize them. Now they let you have, I think it's up to like $5,000 of startup costs that you can expense. So you want to be aware of those rules, especially if your expenses are more than $5,000. All right. Bank account, you said you don't have a separate one. I probably would open up a separate one. You could still use your Social Security number. Just set it up, you know, special account or something like that. Sometimes the banks will tell you that you have to get it your own employer identification number, but you might not have to do that yet. See how the business goes. Okay, Jane, I hope I answered all your questions. Folks, we're at the half hour. I'm going to give the number one more time. We're going to come back and talk about getting ready for tax season. 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services for more than 25 years, including estate planning and tax preparation, especially for Pennsylvania and New Jersey residents subject to state inheritance tax reporting. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
Real quick, since Jane called and she was telling me that she's self-employed and she set up a small company, I'm going to quick jump to this other obscure item I wanted to mention, which has to do with research activities. It's very complicated. It's a complicated tax credit, but I do want to mention it because it was set to expire at the end of 2011, but it has been extended through 2013. And what I want to throw out there is this may apply to self-employed people. Sometimes we think of research credits or research and development as being, you know, big corporations because they're doing all of this, you know, really complicated research. But it can apply to self-employed people who are doing research and development, in particular of new technology or products. Okay, so the form is Form 6765, that's Form 6765 that talks about the research credit. And again, it's very complicated. Research can be around developing software, technologies, as I said, products. And I believe I even saw something that a research credit could apply to some film production activities. And there's other restrictions on like the arts that it wouldn't apply to. So I would have thought that film production would have been the arts. But, you know, it's a fine line, very complicated. Just be aware of it if you're self-employed, if you're an entrepreneur doing some crazy things technologically or, you know, whatever. Be aware that there is a research credit out there and it's for 2012 and 2013, and if it applies to you or you think it might apply to you, look it up and then get help because it is complicated. Lots of restrictions and requirements and lots of IRS oversight. But if you're entitled to it, it would probably be worth checking out. The last item I wanted to mention that was extended was the conservation easement. And the reason I want people to be aware of this is that if you are someone who is thinking about donating development rights to your land, it doesn't mean you're necessarily donating the land. You can still own the land. You can still pass on the land to your heirs. What you're donating is the right to develop that land. So some of the organizations in our area, for example, the Wildlands Conservancy, they try to help people in our community preserve land from further development. There's other organizations like them as well that if you donate, you have to work with a qualified organization. You have to have a qualified appraisal. So there are lots and lots of steps that if you want to do this to preserve your land, you know, for preservation, there's lots of steps involved. But that they extended a big tax benefit for doing this through 2013. And what it is, let's pretend that my land, if I was going to develop it, was worth $300,000. But if I donate the rights to develop it to the nonprofit organization, and let's say by donating those development rights, my land is no longer worth $300,000, now it's worth $100,000. That means I have a $200,000 charitable deduction. Okay? Now, that $200 charitable deduction is only going to be allowed to a limitation based on my page one income. And it was supposed to be 30%, so that if my page one income was $100,000, 30% of that is $30,000. But if you walked into my office and you said, Lori, I made this $200,000 donation, and I'm going to tell you, you're only getting a deduction for $30,000, you might be upset by that. Now, granted, there is a carry forward period for 5 years. But what the Taxpayer Relief Act did is they said the limit is not going to be 30% of your page one income. It's going to be 50% of your page one income. So if I made $100,000 in 2012 and I did this $200,000 conservation easement donation, 50% times 100,000 is 50,000. I made a donation of 200. I get to use 50 this year, and I get to carry forward 150 each year for 5 years until it's used up based on those limitations. So 50% sure sounds better than the 30%. But the reason you need to be aware of this is if you're thinking about doing it, they've extended this through 2013, the higher limitation. Something to take advantage of, but there are lots of hoops to jump through to make sure that you do it properly and that it's a valid conservation easement donation. All right? So those are my little obscure items. They took longer than I thought they would. So now let's talk about getting ready for your tax appointment. First, the phone number here at the studio, if you have questions, 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. I apologize, I hadn't said it in a while. So if you have questions, you got to call in quick because we only have about 20 minutes left. All right, getting organized to prepare your tax return. How do you stay organized? What do you need? What do you have to file with your tax return? Most tax returns nowadays, folks, are getting filed electronically. The IRS wants them filed electronically. Electronic filing helps discover mistakes much, much quicker, and it's just more efficient. So the IRS is requiring that preparers basically file electronically. If you're self-preparing and you're using special software, typically they're going to give you the option to file electronically. Millions and millions and millions and millions of people are doing it. So, I think it's just time to embrace that. I imagine there probably are some people out there who are still filing paper returns and handwriting them in. I'm not aware of anyone still doing that, but I'm sure there are people out there who are doing it. I know last year people were telling me that they couldn't get those forms at the post office anymore. And in fact, I'm not sure they were even available at the library. No, Jeff says. So you kind of have to have almost online access to go get those forms from the IRS's website anyway. I think you could probably call and they can mail them to you. And I know the general number for the IRS is 1-800-829-1040. Good luck getting through to them because it takes a long time for them to answer the telephone because they're very busy. So that's 1-800-829-1040. So if you have online access anyway, if you have a computer, you have a printer, then why not just file electronically if you're going to self-prepare? Or if you're using a tax preparer, again, they're required to file electronically. I don't know if there's a limit, like if they only have like 10 clients that they don't have to. There are certain circumstances where we can't file electronically. Maybe there's certain papers that we have to attach to the return, or there's a form that you know, the IRS won't accept electronically, but basically that's what we're looking at. So you want to make sure that if you're going to file electronically, people, that all of your numbers match up. One quick way to avoid problems or, you know, sidestep problems is when you get your W-2s and you get your 1099s, look at them, double check the Social Security number on them, make sure that they're matching, so that if your employer used the wrong Social Security number or if your brokerage firm used this wrong Social Security number, that you anticipate that, find that, and you can get a corrected 1099 or a corrected W-2 done quick enough so that it won't interfere with your eventual filing of your tax return. Jeff did just mention that I think if you go to the IRS's website, irs.gov, there is information there about filing electronically through the IRS. I think they team up with different providers where you may even be able to file free or use the software free. Typically, they're looking at a certain income level and or certain forms. So basically, the very simple returns, quite often people can do free on the website of either or through the IRS's website, which they will, I think, direct you to providers of that service. I think they sometimes charge a fee if you're going to file like a state return. So the federal return might be free, but the state return might not be free. And I don't know if there's a fee if you do like a direct deposit or if you change your refund to go into a different bank account or multiple bank accounts, because the IRS is giving us options to do things like that now. So just go to the website for the IRS. It's a great website. I love it. I'm on it like all the time. And it's irs.gov. So thanks, Jeff, for mentioning that. So getting ready for your tax preparation, you want to make sure that your documents have the correct name, Social Security number, and that the amounts look reasonable and accurate and all of that. The other thing you want to do is your documents are going to come in either in the mail or electronically, and you want to set up a folder to make sure you're gathering all that information and putting it into your tax folder. In particular, if you use a tax preparer and you go into the tax appointment and you say to the tax preparer, well, that's all online now. Can't you get that online? Well, usually not. Tax preparers at different CPA firms aren't going to have access to your websites for work where we can, you know, you can go on and you privately enter your password and your user ID. Tax preparers, number one, don't have the time to go do that. And number two, shouldn't be doing that during your tax appointments, because it's, you know, privacy reasons, and we shouldn't be seeing your passwords or anything like that. So if you have all your information electronically and you're using a tax preparer, either send it to them via an email with a secured email, password protected, and tell them how to open it, or print it and put it in your little tax file and bring it into your appointment. Folks, if you have questions this evening, you can still call in at 610-758-8810. That's 610-758-8810. As those papers start coming in the mail, a clear indication on the envelope that it's important is if it has anything to do with income taxes, it is going to be stamped important tax information. That is an IRS rule. It is required. If someone sends you something that has to do with your income tax, it has to be stamped on the envelope important tax information enclosed. So as soon as you see those envelopes with that designation on it, you know, open it. Open the envelope, throw the envelope away, because you don't want your tax preparer to sit there and open all your mail. It's just a waste of everyone's time. So open your mail, throw the envelopes away, throw away maybe like the extra little privacy policy notices or whatever, and then put it into a tax folder and mark your tax folder 2012 tax preparation 1040, whatever it takes for you to know what it is, and start putting all that information in your tax folder. One of the things that you want to pay attention to that might be important in that envelope, and it might be important to you and your tax preparer, especially if it is brokerage statements, if you have investments that you have mutual funds And the mutual funds may have an element of investments in treasuries. A piece of your dividends from those mutual funds may not be taxable to Pennsylvania. It's not just municipal bonds in Pennsylvania that aren't taxable to Pennsylvania. It's also the percentage of investments that are in U.S. treasuries. So sometimes people will have money market funds that might be, you know, money market, U.S. government, treasury fund. Well, chances are a big portion of any income you've earned on that mutual fund may have a high investment in direct U.S. obligations that would be not income taxable to Pennsylvania. And in those brokerage statement envelopes, sometimes they have those breakdowns, those percentages. So if you see any extra papers in your documents from your broker, save those kinds of documents because that might have some important information. It doesn't always amount to much, but it could. It all depends on how much other income you have and which fund you're in. Okay, we're going to take our last break of the night, and the phone number to call in is 610-758-8810. Back in a minute.
WDIY thanks its members and Valley National Financial Advisors, offering a broad spectrum of financial services including portfolio management, tax return preparation, and financial planning for the accumulation years, retirement years, and estate distribution. On the web at valleynationalgroup.com or 610-868-9000.
American folk and traditional music is a crazy quilt of colors and textures. In the tradition traces its many patterns and designs. Music handed down from generation to generation. In the tradition, Wednesday evening at 7 on WDIY FM Lehigh Valley Community Public Radio.
Welcome back. That was Tom Druckenmiller. He has such a soothing voice. So if you need to have a calm evening, you can stay tuned with him after this show. He's got a great radio voice. Anyway, the phone number this evening, if you have questions, 610-758-8810. You can call live on air and we can sit and chit chat, or you can call and just give your question to Andrea and she will bring it in to me and I'll do the best I can to answer it. We're talking about now getting ready to prepare your tax return, what you need to pay attention to in those envelopes that come in the mail, the important tax information envelopes, and what you can throw away and weed out and that type of thing. Also, you know, if there's pages in those statements that have extra, you know, pages with no real information on them, I get rid of those too. Let me see what else. Your W-2s are important, but you know what else is important when you're going to prepare your tax return sometimes is your pay stub. Because what I'm finding is sometimes they're putting more and more detail on W-2s, but sometimes it's not all the detail. And the pay stub that you have at the year end of year sometimes gives that extra information that your tax preparer might need or that you might have. For example, something that might be on your pay stub that's not reported on your W-2 might be a contribution to the United Way. Quite often we see employers take out automatically out of someone's pay their contribution to the United Way. We will see some employers who will actually be nice enough to put that in the extra other information box on the W-2, but they don't always do that, or they're getting away from doing it because they have to put so much other information on the W-2. So the beautiful thing about the pay stub at the end of the year is it will have things like United Way, union dues. It might have information about flexible spending accounts. Again, the employers and the IRS are working together to make that information better and better on the W-2, but it might not all be captured. So your pay stub. Extra information might not be available in paper form. Your employer might not be giving you all those papers anymore like they used to. I know where I work, it's all electronic now. It's very difficult to remember to go and pull that stuff off that website and print it and kind of put it all together. You've got to kind of force yourself to like take a moment and say, okay, what do I need for income tax front when I'm at work and I have access to the, corporate private website. Let's pull that stuff down now and print it off. All right. So try to remember to do all that. What else are you going to need? You're going to need things like your check register, if you're still writing checks. If you do everything online, then you may be able to have the ability to print off, you know, your activity from your bank account for the year. What do you need in there? Well, if you're doing any charitable contributions, you want to make sure if whether you've taken it out of, you know, using a debit card or a credit card or writing checks, that you are accounting for all of your charitable contributions. If you've made charitable contributions throughout the year of property, personal effects, clothing, furniture, household goods, you needed to get at the time the receipt from the charity. So whether it was American Family Services, Salvation Army, Goodwill, Purple Heart, all of those organizations have receipts that they give people when they're dropping things off or when they're picking them up. You have to have those in your records. The IRS is very strict on charitable contributions now. You need receipts. If it's $250 or more, you need an acknowledgement back from the charity. If you write a check for $100 and you have your canceled check, that works as well. But what I'm finding is charities really are almost giving receipts for everything these days. So I even get receipts from them when it's like $10. So keep all those receipts together. And again, in particular, if it's donations that you're making, in-kind donations, you have to have the receipt and you have to have it all spelled out, what it is and the value. And don't expect your tax preparer to know what the value is of the stuff that you gave away. They really aren't going to know. They're not going to know that you had, you know, 100 t-shirts in that garbage bag that you dropped off at the Goodwill. So if you know that you had 100 t-shirts in the bag and maybe they're worth $2 a piece, you know, that might be $200 donation. And don't overdo it. You can't say that your t-shirts were worth $10 a piece if you know, they were all ratty tatty or something. It has to be in very good condition. So make sure you have all of those items in order. If you're ever in an audit, they're going to ask for them. So don't assume you'll figure it out once you get audited. Do it right from the start, and then there's never any problems. Do it right from the start. Okay. We had another call off air. Was a grad student in 2012 with no income, wasn't allowed to work, and supported herself for all expenses. Only has less than $100 in savings and a CD with less than $100. Student loans haven't been paid. Opted for deferment. Do I have to file? If so, for what? Let me just see. I don't see any income here. So my grad school student caller, if in 2012 you did not have any income that was reportable to you, either through a W-2 or, you know, your interest income, you probably didn't have any interest more than $10. I mean, you probably wouldn't have had anything on $100. But if your income was less than $10, the banks won't even report it to you. In student loan interest, you don't have any because you're on deferment. You're a grad student, so you don't qualify for any refundable education credit. I would say, based on these circumstances, it would not appear to me that you would have to file. Your income would, you have no income, so I don't see any reason why you would have to file. Okay, so I hope that helps. You can see all these kind of limitations and exemptions, etc., on the IRS's website as well, irs.gov. Grad student. If the grad student is under 24 and still a student, you may actually qualify as a dependent on your parents' return, because I'm not exactly sure who is taking care of your expenses. It said that you supported yourself for all expenses, but was that student loans? Was it your parents? So you might want to have a conversation with your parent, because if you're under 24 and you're still a student, you could actually qualify as a dependent on their tax return, and they might get more of a tax refund by doing that. And, you know, maybe they would share that with you. So you want to have that kind of conversation. Thank you for calling in. I appreciate that. All right. Some other things to do for getting ready for your tax return. Take your 2011 tax return out of the drawer. Look at it. See what's on it, and that will help you remember everything you're going to need to watch out for 2012. So when you look at 2011, you might see that you had a W-2 from working at XYZ company because you worked there in, let's say, January. Let's say you worked there, XYZ company, through the end of 2011, and you got a new job in February of 2012. But you worked at XYZ in January of 2012, too. But it's been so long since you've worked at XYZ, you completely forgot about them. Well, you've got to remember if you have any overlapping activity from either working or brokers, meaning you maybe switched from XYZ broker to a new broker, ABC, you have to make sure that you've accounted for all of that activity. Again, your tax preparer won't always know it. Your software that you're using may not know it. So pull out your 2011 tax return, go through it, look at your Schedule B where all the interest and dividends are reported, and say to yourself, do I still have that bank account? Did I have that bank account in 2012? Oh no, I closed it in November of 2011. I wouldn't have that in 2012. Oh, am I sure about that? Do I remember that? You want to make sure you do. Here's another thing that people tend to forget about a lot. If you have stock options that you've exercised in 2012, and we have a few corporations in the Lehigh Valley that give stock options to their employees. If you have stock options that you exercised and sold in 2012, you might not think you have anything to report because you're saying to yourself, oh, when I exercise stock options, I know it goes on my W-2. Well, yes, some of the activity does go on your W-2, and that is the appreciation in the value of your exercise cost versus the fair market value on the day you exercise. That amount goes on your W-2. But you then have to sell those shares. Let's say I exercised options that cost $1,000, and when I exercised them, the stock was worth $1,500. That $500 is on my W-2. The $1,000 I, in essence, paid for, even though I could pay for it by selling the stock. It's called a cashless exercise. What happens, though, I've sold that with some broker, whatever my corporation uses, a Fidelity, a Merrill Lynch, one of those. They are going to issue a 1099-B, B as in boy, and they're going to report a $1,500 sale. And you say to yourself, but wait a minute, I sold it, but, you know, again, it was all on my W-2. That's what my employer told me. The sale is separate from the exercise transaction. So what you have to do is report on Schedule D a sale of $1,500, and then the cost, in my example, was the $1,000 I paid, even though it was a cashless exercise, plus the $500 that's included on my W-2. So I have a sale price of $1,500. I have a cost of $1,500. Zero difference. Again, you say, Lori, why would I have to put that on my tax return? There's zero difference because the IRS only knows about the $1,500 sale. That's all they see. Well, the rules are changing on that. They might see the cost basis now of $1,500, but you still have to report it based on sale proceeds. Okay? Other quick things, you need to make sure you have your real estate taxes. If you're someone who has not itemized in the past, itemized your deductions, let's pretend you were married in the past. Now you're single. You lost your loved one. You're single. You may now be able to itemize. In the past, you may not have because you were married filing joint. Now you're single. You might be able to itemize. You look at real estate taxes, mortgage interest, charitable contributions, medical expenses. You got to make sure you revisit that. Use tax. Did you pay any sales tax on or did not pay sales tax on items that you purchased out of state? You've got to be aware of how much you're spending on use tax. So get yourself organized. Go through your prior year tax return and make sure you're accounting for everything and keeping track of everything. Next week, I am going to talk about some things we need to pay attention to early in the year. I'm going to just quickly highlight FAFSA forms. That's the free application for financial federal student aid. I'm just going to highlight that quickly. Some things that you need to pay attention to. And maybe take more calls and questions on people getting ready. So it'll be a bit of a surprise of what I'm talking about next week other than that. Otherwise, folks, I want you to enjoy your week. Stay tuned for Tom Druckenmiller with In the Tradition Folk Music. Remember, pay attention, be proactive, not reactive, and make the best of your financial choices. Thank you, Jeff. Thank you, Andrea. Thank you, callers. Have a great week.